reading from Matthew chapter 28, verses 19 and 20. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. These are words of Jesus and appropriate for today's topic, Why and How Should We Tell Others?, as presented by Nikki Gumbel, founder of the Alpha Course. But first, I must say thank you for listening to this broadcast, which is a segment from an Alpha Talk and is not Alpha in its entirety. Alpha is a series of interactive sessions exploring the Christian faith, typically including food, a short talk and discussion in small groups where you can share your thoughts. Find an Alpha near you at alphausa.org. This broadcast heard on Great News Radio is produced by Alpha International, copyright Alpha International 2015, Alpha Talks 2002 to 2006. Here's Nikki Gumbel, founder of the Alpha Course, addressing the topic, Why and How Should We Tell Others?
Before I was a Christian, I used to be rather irritated by Christians who tried to tell me about their faith. They tried to kind of convert me. I was an atheist, but I didn't go around trying to make other people atheists. And it seemed to me rather interfering. And I couldn't see why they did it. Sometimes people say to me, surely the best kind of Christian is the kind of person who is a Christian, but doesn't talk about their faith. Surely it's a kind of private matter. And sometimes they refer to some relation of theirs, sort of Uncle Norman, who is this wonderful Christian, but never talks about his faith. And the question I always want to ask is, well, how did Uncle Norman hear about it? Someone must have told him. And if the early Christians had not told people about their faith, none of us would know. So why should we tell people? First of all, because Jesus told us to. Jesus died for us. He rose again from the dead. And then he said, now, go and tell people about this amazing news that you can be forgiven, you can be set free, you can have eternal life. And really had no other plans except to use us to tell other people. The word go appears 1,514 times in the Bible. I didn't count that, but somebody did. In the New Testament, it's 233 times. In Matthew's Gospel, 54 times. Jesus says, go and tell. Go and invite. Go and make disciples. Second reason is because of our love for others. As we look around and we see people who are struggling to find meaning, purpose in their lives, struggling with guilt, struggling with fear of death, and so on. It's rather like, I guess, if you're in a desert and you came across water, it would be selfish to say, oh, it's wonderful to find water, but not want to tell other people about it. And I think a recognition of the fact that there's a kind of spiritual hunger out there sometimes comes from surprising sources. The singer Sinead O'Connor said this, as a race, we feel empty because our spirituality has been wiped out and we don't know how to express ourselves. And as a result, we're encouraged to fill that gap with alcohol, drugs, sex, or money. People out there, she adds grimly, are screaming for the truth. Third reason to tell people is because good news travels fast. We can't keep it to ourselves. We don't want to. And the word gospel actually means good news. I remember when our first son was born. My wife, Pippa, gave me a list of the people. There were 10 people on the list that I was to ring and tell about this wonderful occasion. And the first person on the list was her mother. So I rang her mother and I said, great news. We've had a son. Pips is well. He's well. He weighs 16 pounds or whatever it was. Then I rang the second person on my list, which was my mother. Well, I couldn't get through to my mother. Her phone was engaged. So I rang the third person on the list, who was Pippa's sister. I said, it's great news. She said, I know, you've had a son. I said, how do you know? She said, well, my mother's just rung me. And I went to the next person. I said, hello. They said, oh, congratulations, I hear you've had a son. And I went down the list. Each person had heard. And when I finally got through to my mother, I discovered that she'd been engaged because she was talking to Pippa's mother, who'd been ringing her to tell her the news. I didn't say to Pippa's mother, you really got to tell people about this. She was excited. And when we're excited about a relationship with Jesus, it's the most natural thing in the world to want to tell people. So how do we go about it? In my experience, certainly in my own life, there have been two sort of equal and opposite dangers. I think I've swung in my life between insensitivity and fear. When I first became a Christian, it was definitely insensitivity that predominated. I just wanted to tell everybody. I remember I'd been a Christian for about 10 days, and I went to a party, and I was determined to tell the first person I saw at this party about Jesus. And the first person I saw at this party happened to be an old friend of mine, who is now my wife, Pippa. She wasn't then my wife or even my girlfriend. She was just an old friend, and I knew she was not a Christian. So I thought, right, I'm going to go and tell her about Jesus. Well, in the time that I had been a Christian, in the 10 days that I'd been a Christian, I'd been to this talk on telling others. And in this talk, they said, if you want to lead someone to Christ, the first thing you must do is establish the fact that the person needs Jesus. So I thought, right, establish the fact she needs Jesus. So I went up to her on the dance floor. I didn't want to waste any time with polite conversation. I said, hello, Pippa, you look awful. You really need Jesus. Well, as you can imagine, this put her off for a very long time. And when she did finally become a Christian, it was through somebody totally different. The next party I went to, I decided I'd go better equipped. This was I think it was a 21st birthday party. It was a dinner jacket affair. And I decided I'd take some literature. So I put in my top pocket a little booklet called Becoming a Christian by John Stott. And I also thought, you know, people might raise questions, because if you have a conversation, people might say, well, is there any evidence for the resurrection? So I took Evidence for the Resurrection by Norman Anderson. And sometimes people, you know, they want to know about suffering, and John Young's book I recommended earlier, that's very good on the question of suffering. And then other people respond better to a kind of a story rather than a theological book. So I took Corrie ten Boom's book, A Hiding Place. I took Run, Baby, Run. I took The Cross and the Switchblade. And, of course, the most powerful way to speak to people is to use the Bible. So I took a Bible. And then, of course, if somebody does become a Christian, you would want to give them a New Testament. So I took one of those and maybe some Bible reading notes and some follow-up material. And so I stuffed all my pockets of my dinner jacket. Luckily, dinner jackets have lots of pockets. So I filled this dinner jacket with all these books. And finally, I managed to persuade some poor girl to dance with me. And I got out on the dance floor and I was like this. I was sort of... I said, I'm so sorry, I'm a bit tired. Do you mind if we go and sit down? So we went and sat down, and I quickly brought the subject round to Christianity. And she started asking questions. I said, you know, it's amazing you asked that question. I just happen to have a booklet here about the resurrection. Oh, suffering. Yeah, I've got one about that. And this pile of books went up like this. And she staggered off with these books. The amazing thing was, she came back a week later and she said she was on a boat over to, she went on holiday and she was on the boat over to France, and she turned to her neighbour and she said, I've just become a Christian. And she died in a riding accident at the age of 21. And I've often thought it's amazing that God used even my insensitivity to help her at that moment in her life. But that is not the way to go about it. So I swung from insensitivity to fear. If you go around like that, as kind of bull in the china shop, as I did, sooner or later you get hurt and you kind of get a bit more cautious. And there came a point in my life when I really became quite frozen with fear, even to talk about Jesus in any context. Ironically, I think the time that I was most fearful was when I was at theological college. I was at theological college in Oxford, and while we were there, we went on this kind of mission, I suppose, to the north of England, to a place called Allerton. And the way that it worked, we'd go and speak in people's houses. But before we did that, we'd have supper with people vaguely connected with the church. And in our case, my friend Rupert Charkham and I, we went to have supper with, well, the wife was involved in a community group. The husband was a complete atheist. He was a solicitor, rather smart solicitor, and I think he was chancellor or something or other. And they lived in a smart house, and they had smart children, and we were having a smart meal together. And over this meal, he leant over the table and he said, you know, well, what are you guys doing up here anyway? So I said, well, we've come up here by train. And we're here because we're such good friends together at Oxford. And we're here to And my friend could bear this no longer. He said, well, we're here to tell people about Jesus. Oh, my goodness. How embarrassing. And I thought, what's happened? Why am I ashamed even to mention the word Jesus? And most of my life, it's been like that. You know, I've swung from insensitivity to fear. And then I've heard a talk, go and make disciples. And I've gone back to insensitivity. And then I get hurt and I go back to fear. And all the way along, I've been thinking, what's the right way to do this? And I think, in essence, it boils down to one word. And that is love. That's why we tell people. And that's how we tell people. I find it helpful to think of this subject under, really, five headings, all beginning with the letter P, to make it slightly easier to remember. And the first one is presence. Would you like to turn to Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 to 16? Jesus said this, verse 13, you are the salt of the earth. Verse 14, you are the light of the world. Verse 16, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. Jesus says to this group of people, he says, look, just as he would say to us tonight, he says, look, you can make a difference to the whole world. You are the salt of the earth. You're the light of the whole world. What he's saying is we can have a wide-ranging influence. And we do that not by withdrawal. This is no good if you cover a light. We do it by involvement. You have to be out there. You have to be out there in your jobs. You're on the front line. Those of us involved in kind of full-time Christian work are hopefully supporting you. But you're the ministers. You're the people who are bringing the light of Jesus Christ to the world around, to your families, to your neighborhood. So we need to be in the world, but we need to be different. Jesus says you're salt. Now, salt in the ancient world was used instead of refrigeration to stop things going bad. And he says, you're the people who need to stop the society around you going bad. And you're light. You're the ones who allow the light of Christ to shine through you. We do it, he says, by your good deeds. Everything that we do and say as Christians. And it's summarized in, I suppose, love your neighbor as yourself. It's living out the Christian life, particularly with those in close proximity to us. Our family, our work colleagues, people maybe we share a flat with. It's really enough that they know that we're Christians. We can't constantly be sort of forcing it down their throats. But if they know that we are Christians, they watch our lives. And we're called to be different, to show it through our love for our enemies, our little acts of kindness, honesty, integrity. This is hard. You know, it's really hard to live the kind of life that Jesus calls us to live. But this is what we're called to. We're called to a different love. That's what we're striving for. With our family. When I first became a Christian, I immediately tried to convert my parents. And I realized that was so counterproductive. Somebody pointed out, you know, if you say to your parents, as I'd said, I've become a Christian, what that is an implied criticism of their upbringing, the way that they brought you up. And I wish somebody had told me earlier that it would have been better to say something along the lines of, you know, I'm beginning to find there's a bit more to the Christian faith than I first thought. And then to live it out. Same with a husband-wife relationship. In fact, St. Peter gives very clear guidance. Don't look it up, but in 1 Peter 3, verse 1, he says, if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives, when they see the purity and reverence of your lives. And so often I've noticed on Alpha, people say, when we say, how do you come to be here? They say, well, I noticed a change in my wife. I noticed a change in my husband. I noticed a change in my son, in my daughter, in my parent, in my friend at work. They see the difference. It involves, of course, more than just our family and our immediate friends. It involves the needs of the people around us. Relieving human need, hunger, homelessness, poverty. I'm just so impressed by, well, many of you and all the young people in our church when I see the kind of things that they get involved in. And then social justice, the removal of injustice, inhumanity, gross inequality in our society. William Wilberforce, he was aged 27, which is actually the median age. It's kind of the average age of people who come on an Alpha course here at this church. He was aged 27 when he sensed God's call to fight against the inhuman, degrading slave trade. 10 million slaves left Africa for the plantations in the year 1787. And in that year, he put down a motion in the House of Commons about the slave trade. It was not a popular cause, but he said this: "So enormous, so dreadful did its wickedness appear that my own mind was completely made up for abolition. Let the consequences be what they would, I from that time determined I would never rest until I had effected its abolition." Bills were debated in 1789, 1791, 1792, 1794, 1796, 1798, 1799. They all failed. In 1831, he sent a message to the Anti-Slavery Society in which he said, "Our motto must be perseverance, and ultimately I trust the Almighty will crown our efforts with success." He did. In July 1833, the Abolition of Slavery Bill was passed in both Houses of Parliament. 3 days later, Wilberforce died. He was buried in Westminster Abbey in national recognition of his 45 years of persevering struggle on behalf of African slaves. But what about today? There are massive needs, injustices out there. What about the fact that 800 million people live on less than a dollar a day and go to bed hungry every night? If we were to fast on bread and water for the rest of our lives, we would still be vastly better off than them. Every 3 seconds, poverty takes a child's life. Today and every day, until we act, 30,000 children die because of avoidable diseases, i.e. because they live in poverty. 8,000 die of AIDS every day in developing countries. There will be 15 million preventable deaths this year. And that's what I love about what Bono is doing, inspired by his Christian faith. And he was invited to speak at the Labour Party conference in Brighton. He said this. He said, "My name is Bono. I'm a rock star. Excuse me if I appear a little nervous. I'm not used to appearing before crowds of less than 80,000 people. I heard the word party, obviously got the wrong idea." And he went on to speak of his time working in an Ethiopian orphanage. He said, "We lived for a month working at the orphanage. The locals knew me as Dr. Good Morning. The children called me the girl with the beard." Don't ask. "It just blew my mind. It opened my mind. On our last day at the orphanage, a man handed me his baby and said, 'Take him with you.' He knew in Ireland his son would live. In Ethiopia, his son would die. I turned him down. In that moment, I started this journey. In that moment, I became the worst thing of all, a rock star with a cause. Except this isn't a cause. 6,500 Africans dying a day of treatable, preventable disease, dying for want of medicines you and I can get at our local chemist. That's not a cause. That's an emergency." And I think it's easy to be overwhelmed, really, by the scale of the problems and to think, can we really make a difference? A man was walking along a beach in Mexico, and he saw that what had happened is the tide had gone out, and there were tens of thousands of starfish left stranded on the beach, dying for lack of oxygen in the heat of the sun. And there was a young boy who was picking up the starfish one at a time, going down to the sea and just throwing them in, and going back, get another one, picking it up, going back and throwing it into the sea. And this man went up to him and he said, "Look, can't you see? There are tens of thousands of starfish out here. You don't really think that what you're doing is going to make any difference." And the young boy picked up another one. He went down to the water's edge and he threw it in the sea. And he said, "I bet it made a difference for that one." That's what we can do. Nelson Mandela said this, "It's not the kings and generals who make history, but the masses of the people." That's the first P, presence. Secondly, persuasion. Would you like to turn to Acts chapter 17, verses 2 to 4? As his custom was, Paul went into the synagogue. On three Sabbath days, he reasoned with them from the scriptures, explaining and proving that the Christ had to suffer and rise from the dead. "This Jesus I'm proclaiming to you is the Christ," he said. Some of them were persuaded. There's a big difference, I think, between pressure and persuasion. Pressure is not a good idea.
You are hearing an Alpha Talk presented by Nikki Gumbel, the founder of the Alpha Course. And we'll continue with this topic, why and how should we tell others, on the Tuesday edition of Mark and Friends, where he'll continue with the five P's, presence, persuasion, proclamation, power, and prayer. Telling others about Jesus arises out of our own relationship with God. As we walk with God, it should be quite natural for us to talk to people about that relationship in cooperation with the Spirit of God. But if you're someone who has never shared your faith before, or maybe have not begun on that faith journey, there's a free call that you can make to some wonderful people, and they'll talk with you about having a relationship with God, or will be happy to answer other questions about the Christian faith. Dial 1-888-NEED-HIM. That's 1-888-NEED-HIM. Now, if you missed a portion of today's broadcast, or can't tune in at the same time tomorrow for part two, know that today and tomorrow's broadcast will be archived at greatnewsradio.org once the programs have aired. So stop by greatnewsradio.org and go to our archived programs link, and you can hear the whole broadcast in its entirety. Thank you for listening to this broadcast, which is a segment from an Alpha Talk and is not Alpha in its entirety. Alpha is a series of interactive sessions exploring the Christian faith, typically including food, a short talk and discussion in small groups where you can share your thoughts. Find an Alpha near you at alphausa.org. This broadcast heard on Great News Radio was produced by Alpha International, copyright Alpha International 2015, Alpha Talks 2002 to 2006. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you and have a great day and night.